from WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. It's May, nice weather is finally here, and some of you may be thinking about what your teenager will do when school gets out. Well, we've got somebody who can help. Frances Jensen is the chair of the neurology department at the University of Pennsylvania and author of The Teenage Brain, a neuroscientist's survival guide to raising adolescents and young adults. She spoke with Living Lab Radio producer Elsa Partan.
What makes the teenage brain so different from the adult brain?
Yes, well, this is where it all gets very interesting because science only in the last decade and a half has really shown us this is a stage unto itself and that the teenage brain it has unique strengths and some unique weaknesses. So let me just tell you briefly what the key differences are, and then we can talk about how it plays out in terms of school and summer. So the teenage brain is actually more active than the adult brain. We have our brain cells, which are called neurons, are very active, and they make connections called synapses. Teenagers have more neurons and more synapses than they will as an adult. Children have the most. You have more, and then you prune them to adulthood. So they have more activity going on in individual brain areas. But the way the brain areas are connected to one another, meaning the emotional areas of the brain versus, say, the frontal lobe, is delayed until adulthood. The brain is not fully mature until mid to late 20s even. So we see that kids are risk takers, novelty takers, very bright, but sometimes are not really good at decision making. That is because their frontal lobe is one of the last places to fully connect up with high speed connections.
And that pruning process is actually pretty important. It's not just that we're losing brain cells for no good reason.
That's right. This is a very active process of sort of selection. And so it's a use it or lose it, but also if you use it, you build it. So as we create new memories, new skills, we're actually creating new connections. And interestingly, the molecular machinery, if you will, the proteins and genes that are responsible for building those synapses to be stronger when we learn are actually set at higher levels by nature in childhood and adolescence. Adolescence is sort of coming down to adulthood, but they're still more active. So they can learn things harder, longer, stronger, faster than they will as an adult for the same amount of effort, which is a great advantage.
I'm talking with neurologist Frances Jensen about how teenagers can make the most of their summer vacation for their developing brains. Let's get right to it. You've been quoted as saying, when you think about where the teen brain is, it's a Ferrari with weak brakes. So what kind of summer experiences might make use of that Ferrari?
Right. Well, it needs a few test drives. Let's just put it that way. Summer is a great time to do that. Teenagers are constantly learning. They can, as I said, learn at higher rates, but maybe some of their decision-making is still TBD in terms of honing that skill. And this won't happen until even after college, as again, the brain is not done until your mid to late 20s. So you're not mature when you start college and you're not mature when you end college. So some of the things I'm going to say apply to kids that are taking summers between college years. This is a great time to work because they can build synapses so quickly. It is a great time to work on weaknesses to try to correct them and compensate for them, be them academic or, you know, a skill set of any kind, frankly, but also hone strengths. So if there is a particular, the child is showing a proclivity to musical or some other skill set, this is the time to really notice this and help support that and nurture that. This is where adults around the kids can perform frontal lobe assists, where we will help the child, the teenager, find where that balance is. And the summer is a perfect time to do this.
And what are some benefits of summertime that the school year just doesn't have?
Right. So the summertime, A, has a little bit more opportunity for rest and relaxation. So first of all, we know a lot about the effects of sleep deprivation that are adverse on learning and memory and stress as well. So summer is a time when we can, some of those everyday stresses and possible sleep deprivation, we can kind of mitigate with summer. So that is a healthier time for the brain to learn. Also, we all learn by trial and error. And one of the things that doesn't happen so much in a very structured school environment is where everything's being recorded, you know, your transcript, how you do on the sports field, and then, of course, socially, how people are leaving things on Instagram and Facebook and creating this paper trail behind them, or a digital trail behind them, that is not erasable, actually. The summer offers opportunities to make some, to really be able to do trial and error without really hard set consequences. And I think that's really healthy. One of the things I think we're all concerned about is how rigid the environment of our kids has become necessarily, just that everything seems so revved up. And the summer is a time when you can really give a kid an account, a situation for which they're accountable, and just push the envelope a little bit in a safe way and see if the teenager can really actually maintain that responsibility. And if they don't, they're going to learn from an error that is a kind of a safe error where nothing's getting recorded hard set in their legal or school record.
I'm talking with neurologist Frances Jensen, giving us tips on the best kind of summer activities for teenage brain development. Let's talk about internships or summer jobs or even summer coursework. It sounds kind of structured, but is that structure useful, or is it too much like school?
Well, as I said, you know, you're in it with the long haul with your kid. You're trying to get them to realize their best potential by the time they turn into an adult. And if there is a weakness that is actually holding them back, I think it is only being fair to them to offer them an opportunity to work on that weakness, while it's going to never be easier than it is right now to reverse that weakness or work on it. It's going to be a lot harder if they try at 28, 29 to work on that reading issue that they've had all along than if they do it now. Same thing with childhood. It's, you know, age appropriately, children could even learn faster than teenagers. So I think, again, you can begin to role model for a teenager how to sort of prioritize things. This is a challenge because, of course, as I said, their emotional areas of their brain, the limbic system, we call it, which is sort of deep behind sort of where your ears are in your brain, connects up first because the brain connects itself from the back to the front. So it is pretty well connected and relatively very active, actually, in an adolescent and teenager. So they tend to be impulsive. They don't have the frontal lobe coming back to say, bad idea, don't do that, like we will and do in adults. But other functions of the frontal lobe are decision-making, organization, judgment, empathy, along with impulse control. So again, working with your teenager, you can role model for them, you know, sit down, this is a perfect month to do this, and say, well, what have you got lined up? So how do you think that course is going? If you really want to go to this kind of college or really say you're going to be that sort of a specialist, you may need, your grades aren't showing that. So what can we do? Let's work through this and prioritize. You know, maybe their needs are a specific academic interest. Maybe it's to just get a responsibility and have a job and teach them a more responsible behavior because they don't necessarily keep track of things the way you'd like them to, or don't get up and, you know, show up at things in a way that they would be expected to. Everybody's got different needs. And this is where the parent really, I think, comes in to play a really positive role. And not the whole point of the book that I wrote was more to show parents the real biology behind this amazing being in front of them, the teenager. They aren't there to harass us. They're not there to be annoying. They aren't an alien species, really. They are, it's biology playing itself out. And to show a little bit of empathy to them and sort of help them work through organizing. So sitting down with your teenager now and going through, okay, you may have that summer job set, but what else do you need to do? You know, what are other things you do? Or are you stressed? Should you have more time off and, you know, do some meditation, do other kinds of activities that will help sort of break what might be a vicious cycle.
Mm. So it sounds like the parent in this role is not necessarily programming the whole summer and then providing it on a platter to the teen, but it's a conversation.
Very mutual. Yeah. It should be. This is how you're teaching them to be an adult, to take accountability from themselves. But it's graded. You're not going to talk to a 14-year-old the way you're going to talk to a 19-year-old.
Yeah.
But you're not going to talk to a 19-year-old the way you would to another peer adult. Teenagers are not adults with fewer miles on them, and we have to understand that.
Neurologist Frances Jensen is talking about the teenage brain and what summer can provide for these developing brains. Let's talk about older teens who are headed off to college.
Yes.
What can we talk to them about as they enter the summer?
Yes. Well, I think that is a hugely important discussion to have, and have it multiple times over the summer. This is a scary time for the parents, maybe even more than for the teenagers themselves, that they're leaving the nest, they're going away, and they're potentially going to face a lot of unusual risks and situations. So the best thing to do, since they are outstanding learners, they are learning machines, is to start talking to them about, well, let's and we know that they may not necessarily have the split-second response time to react to a decision-making moment that they might encounter in college. It's worth talking to them about, well, what would you do if you found yourself try out for a club and they're hazing you and you don't want to do X? You know, how would you respond? And still, let's talk about what the words you could use, the sentences, what you would come up with to preserve your social status, which, of course, for teenagers is everything, the peer pressure, the status, because, of course, their emotional, you know, range is very high at this point. You can't cover everything, but what it does is it opens up a dialogue between you and your teenager that hopefully will persist when they arrive at college, and you will be able to maintain reasonable and truthful contact with your teenager over the course of their first semester or two in college, and stay part of their lives, not by being a helicopter parent, but just somebody that they can bounce things off of. I think that's a really important role for parents, but you have to demonstrate that you're good at it, and you have to gain their trust. So you have to have some successes, and that's what the summer is for.
Where can parents go for more ideas and resources for summertime?
Well, I think a lot of, you know, high school counselors, for instance, are really good partners. You need to access them. They will know a lot about what's available in the community, and they'll also know a little bit about what your kids, you know, relative strength and weaknesses are. And especially for kids that are 1 to 2 years before the college decision-making, this is a great time to sort of have a mock college tour. I found actually with my own kids, when bringing my younger son along with my older son, and there was 2 years between them, along on the college tours, made my younger son, you know, it was sort of unfair because he got to actually see these colleges ahead of time and kind of was looking at what this whole story is. And then it made me think, gosh, I should have done this like 2 years before. But you'd never know that as a first-time parent. But for first-time teenage parents, do it. Take them as a rising junior to colleges, because actually, while you think it, oh, well, this is ridiculous, they're not applying next year, it's hugely helpful for them to just take a look, poke around, and kind of start imagining what this whole next stage of life is about. It also serves as a huge motivator, because they now know they to get from A to B, and they're seeing B, there's actually work in between, and it helps motivate them.
Yeah. And if you've never been on a college campus before, you actually really can't picture it.
Right. And it's a learning experience both for the parent and the kid, because the parent, you know, last I checked, would probably not have been on a college campus for the last, you know, if at all, for the last 40 years or so, or 30 years.
Things might have changed a little bit.
Yes.
Frances Jensen is the chair of the Department of Neurology at the University of Pennsylvania and the author of The Teenage Brain, a Neuroscientist's Survival Guide to Raising Adolescents and Young Adults. Frances, thanks again.
Thank you so much. Have a great summer, everybody.
Up next, when is the best time to learn a new language? Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.